Hello and welcome to Game of Moans, a podcast where we are rewatching Game of Thrones an episode at a time. I am Chris Bolton. With me, as always, our very own mountain, Mr. Mark Williams.
Hello.
And here we go, guys. Season 7, Episode 1, Dragonstone. It's the sprint to the finish from here on out. Two short seasons, longer episodes. Let's dive in, I guess.
You say that. I mean, this wasn't a particularly long episode. I think this was only 55 minutes. I mean, given that you've got credits on it as well, this is probably shorter than a lot we've had recently.
Well, this was the thing. I remember first time out where they said, yeah, we're going to do less episodes, but they're going to be longer. And actually, very few of them are.
It's only when you get to the last season. I think they're all slightly longer. I think the average there is just over an hour. And then you've got a couple of set piece episodes which are about an hour and 20. But by and large, they weren't massively different.
No, they're not. Being on HBO, this is one of those things where the running times are up and down all over the shop anyway.
Yeah.
So it just so happens that I think that they more consistently skew longer in season 7. But again, not massively. It's only that back half of season 8, really, where they start to become feature length. And even then, short features. But anyway, I guess here we go. We've had no break between seasons as we normally do, so we're straight in off the back of last week. And actually, that I think is quite important because, bear in mind, first time many people would have watched this, there was like, what, 18 months, 2 years almost between these seasons?
I think it wasn't slightly long? I think it was supposed to be a year, and then they said, oh, it's going to be about 15 months. And then between season 7 and season 8, it was supposed to be about 15, 18 months, and it was nearer 2 years.
Yeah, it was quite a while. And the only reason I bring that up is because I'm watching it, you know, a week after we watched season 6. And even so, you know, as we said, season 6 ended on quite a kind of a cliffhanger of sorts. You know, we were pumped, the boats were coming across the sea and everything. And then, as usual, just what a fucking boring opening.
Well, I like this scene. It just doesn't fit here.
I've literally written here, it's a good scene, really. But it's the opening of the season, for fuck's sake.
Well, this is it. I mean, I remember thinking this at the time. I like the scene. The dialogue is bollocks, mm-hmm. but when is it not? The dialogue is very poor. And obviously, you know, we as a viewer know what happened to Walder Frey last season, so we know it's not him. So that's all fine. It's a really good scene. But as you said, it's just a really fucking dull opening.
It's really, really dull. I've written boring with about 10 O's in here. And you've hit the nail on the head because my next note after saying it's a good scene, really, but we don't need it. My very next note is this would be far better if we didn't know what Arya did last season. And I don't want to take anything away from that because, as we said, that scene itself was executed very well and was a big moment for Arya. But then it makes this scene completely redundant.
Really. Oh, yeah, completely. It absolutely cheapens it because, she's got her pet. All those Frey men weren't on her list. Walder Frey was on the list. None of the others were. So at this point, she's just gone kind of off the reservation and gone, you know what, fuck, I'm just going to kill everybody.
But we just don't need to see her do that. If she wants to do that, that's fine. We don't need to see it. And actually, you know, the fact that this is another pre-credit scene, only the second or third one that we've had, the second one in recent memory.
Yeah, second in recent memory, right?
But that speaks volumes to me as well, because they know this doesn't fit anyway. This doesn't fit last season and it doesn't fit anywhere else in this episode. They know that. Let's not start the season by just giving them basic film school lessons. But, you know, look, rule one of writing, you know, it seems to me that, like, they know this doesn't fit, but they really like the scene and they don't want to lose it. And, like, look, rule one of storytelling, just kill your darlings. You have to. And it hurts every time.
Yeah.
But if the scene doesn't add anything and doesn't fit, then you just have to get rid of it. And
well, the thing is,
have been left on the floor.
I think, to be honest, I mean, obviously, I haven't watched ahead. I don't know what happens next week, but it seems that the sort of thing, they didn't need to do that in this episode.
No, I don't think they need to do it at all.
No, but if they're intent on doing it, they could have quite easily pushed back, because there's only this scene, the scene with Arya when she's fleeing south and she meets the soldiers, and then Cersei mentions, or Jaime mentions in passing, that the Freys are all dead.
Yeah.
All of that could have come... For what it adds, all of that could have come next week quite easily.
Yeah, completely.
I mean, the problem with this is that we need a strong opening. We need a strong opening episode, which, cards on the table, I don't necessarily think this is. And then on top of that, the episode needs to have a strong opening as well. And this just completely pisses on it because, as you said, we know what Arya did. So this is just kind of hammering home. And it's a nice scene, But at some point, it's, you know, as you said, you've got to kill your darling. And you either have the scene last time mm-hmm. where we see her get her revenge.
Yep.
And we don't necessarily need it, or this time where we don't see her killing Frey, but we know she must have because she takes the face off and she kills everybody else. You don't need both.
No, you don't. And like you say, we could. I like the scene last time, so I think this one is redundant. But if you did want to play it the other way, then yes, she could remove the face and then you could reveal Frey's dead body under the table or something like that. There are ways you could do this.
Yeah.
But again, as
we've never seen a defaced body, have we?
No, we haven't.
So, you know, I mean, you wouldn't know what... No, it could be anybody in there, so you wouldn't necessarily know it was Frey anyway, apart from the fact it was lacking a face and Arya's now wearing it.
I mean, I think you'd pick that up. If you saw a defaced body under the table dressed like Walder Frey, I think you'd pick that up.
The other thing that's always bugged me, right, is they take these faces off. How well do they have to fucking clean them? Because there's never any blood. There's never any edging or anything. It's all meticulously removed. It's like that takes time.
The whole face thing just doesn't work, does it? I'm like, look, this is high fantasy, so there's dragons and shit as well, so we have to cut them some slack. But the face thing has always bugged me anyway. Something's never sat right to me about it because it's never really explained. I mean, we see it as it moves on, and in the last two seasons, we come to understand that, yes, they remove the face from the body. Hmm. Okay, but when we first start seeing it, it's not really said that that's the case. Because they're all, you know, the faces are all in the fucking hall and stuff like that. And just the actual removal of the face and the effect of it, there's something very Mission Impossible about it.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you're peeling someone's face off to make a mask like that, like how fucking good, like your skill with a knife has to be exceptional because...
Yeah.
You know, you're gonna cut the face. You're gonna have to stitch it back together. You're gonna have to dry it out. So it's, you know, you're gonna end up looking like Leatherface essentially. Yeah,
but I mean, not only that. If you think about it, and my extensive knowledge of taking people's faces off will come into the fore here, obviously. But we did see it last season in the scene where she comes in carrying the Wave's face, and she comes in and leads Hagar to the Wave's face. He's there actually. No, you see him cutting a face off. But again, it's like he's just peeling an orange, and he does the edge of it, and it all slides off. But if you think how many connecting muscles there are, how many nerves there are, all the
tissue.
That's
what I'm saying.
You'd have to basically take it off at a bone level, and then you'd be inside plucking it like a fucking pumpkin, trying to get all the excess bit off the edge of the skin.
Yeah, it's always bugged me. The whole face thing has always bugged me. But then I've spoken at length about how much the whole storyline with the many-faced god bugs me anyway, so... Probably best we park that before I get on my high horse about it again. Let's confine that to the past. But yeah, you're dead right. It's annoying and doesn't make sense. None of it does. So just like last time that we had a pre-credit sequence with the Hound, we get the credits after this, and then they get another stab at an opening.
Yes.
And just like last time, they fuck it up again. Because whilst this is really atmospheric, this is good, but this isn't an opening, this is a closing.
Yeah.
Like, this, why does this not round the episode out?
Well, yeah, exactly. This was...
Or round last season out, even.
Yeah.
It just reminds you
what the threat is.
Why not intercut this last season? Like, we had that grand sweeping score and stuff, and you can still end with Dany crossing the sea. But as we're seeing everyone get ready, and they're doing the traditional montage, and Arya's on her way, and Dany's on her way, and Cersei's watching out and stuff like that, why not have this as well? Why not have the storm cloud slowly gathering and intercut that in this montage?
Yeah.
But no.
Because too easy, wasn't it?
Too easy. So instead, they put it here. And again, it doesn't fit here, does it? No. This has no place as the opening of the episode whatsoever. Yeah. Completely kills any momentum that we might have had, which is very fucking little anyway.
Yes.
But, you know, again, I stress that this was like an 18-month or something gap. Like, people were fucking chomping at the bit by the time this showed up. And these are the first two fucking scenes you get off the back of the way season 6 ended. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Seriously, give us, even if you're not going to give us like Dany going to war because it's too early, like you need to open with some fucking action, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, you need something, don't you?
Yeah. I'm pissed off already. So since we're talking as well about sort of, you know, we were talking about peeling the face off and some narrative inconsistencies there and how, you know, suspension of disbelief. Here's one for me then. So let's do a little bit of role play here. Let's pretend now that two complete fucking strangers show up at your door, okay?
Yeah.
You ask them a question to find out who they are. and they give you a very cryptic and creepy response.
Well, that's it. Not only is it very cryptic and creepy, they say they're, you know, Mira Reed and Bran Stark, but does anyone carry an ID?
Exactly. They could be fucking anyone.
But even when they say, well, now do we know who you are? You say you are. Oh, you were at Hardhome. You did this, you did that. Well, how the fuck would Bran Stark know that?
It's just creepy.
It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, he knows it now because he's a three-eyed raven, but no one else knows that he's a three-eyed raven.
Well, that's what I mean. So from Ed Tollett's point of view, how the hell would Bran Stark know that?
Well, exactly. So he just comes across as a creepy little kid. Like, no fucking way would you let these two in. Yeah. You just wouldn't. If nothing else, they look like fucking urchins. They look like they'd rob you blind at this point. Like, no chance would you let these fucking kids in. You'd kick them up the arse and send them on their way.
Well, that's how you tell them to walk around, don't you?
Yeah. Like,
a couple of thousand miles, just off your fuck.
I do not buy the fact that they got let in at all. But, you know, whatever. Moving pieces around the board again.
Yeah.
But so, you know, and that's all there is to say about that scene. They show up and that's that. Back over then with John. So, you know, when we left them last season, they were having debates in a war room, and here they are again, just exactly where we left them, pretty much.
Pretty much.
So far, of all the scenes we've had, this would have been the best opener. Still think we should have opened with some action, but at least this would have made a bit more sense. There's a bit of drama in the scene. There's a bit of conflict. I just have to draw attention again to just how fucking amazing Lady Mormont is. You know, I don't need your permission to defend the North. Just absolutely chopping motherfuckers down at the knees. Just get back in your box, sunshine. I love her. And then we get the developing of this conflict between Jon and Sansa.
Yeah.
And I love it on both counts. I love what this conflict between them does for both characters. This is really good drama, and it elevates both characters, which is what good drama should do. You know, Jon standing up to her is great. But then she is absolutely awesome and a fucking queen. She literally is a queen. I don't mean that in a, like, Yas Queen kind of way. She is, you know... She is acting very regal. She is every bit the Queen of the North by now.
Yeah.
But Jon is a fucking born leader. And the two things aren't necessarily the same.
No.
That conflict between them is great. Like, she clearly has the status and the stature and the power. But Jon has the military know-how and the charisma and the command over everybody. And, you know, there's one good ruler between both of them at this point. And they have to kind of work together. And I just love that. You know, I think that dynamic between them is really, really cool. It gives them something to bounce off each other. You know, Sansa showing him up in front of everybody, but then him quickly cutting her down.
Yeah.
Really good stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, the next scene with them as well, I can't remember if it follows directly on or if it's...
it's directly after.
When they're walking on the parapets and he's sort of, you've got to stop undermining me in front of me. I didn't undermine you. No, they go through all this stuff and it's very clear they don't want to argue. But neither of them is willing to actually listen to the other. Sansa has never been north of the wall. She's never seen what's up there. She's never seen the white. She doesn't know what's coming, apart from what she's been told. So she's looking and thinking, well, everything I've been through in the last six seasons, because of Cersei, because of the Lannisters, that is our threat. And I know what she is like.
Yeah.
And Jon doesn't want to hear it because Jon's like, well, dead are coming, and if they get it, it doesn't matter about Cersei because they're just going to wipe us all out anyway. And they just can't, they're not willing to acquiesce at all to just sort of even try and contemplate that as a point of view. And it's setting it up really well. I think the only thing that really spoils it for me is every time they cut away the fucking Littlefinger.
Yeah, it's a bit excessive here, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you had it in the scene in the, I'm assuming it's some sort of banquet hall or wherever it is where they're all gathered. You're going to see, and every time they show Sansa, immediately they cut back to the Littlefinger, and he's got that little panto villain mustache twirling smirk on his face. We get it. You know,
well,
he's trying to sow the discord, and you're going to try and not have him. He's going to now try and play him off against each other, which obviously he's going to because he's Littlefinger. But it's like, you don't need to tell us that every fucking shot.
No, I mean, the thing is, it worked really well at the end of last season. As I say, I really liked it because you had him and Sir Davos watching everything going on. I thought they played that really well. And first time out, it's been a while. So if you want to throw it in that opening scene as well, fine. Just to remind us what his game plan is.
Yeah.
But to constantly do it, it is not required.
As I say, do it once. That's all you need.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to sledgehammer it home. But yeah, other than that, I think this is a good scene between the two of them when they're on the parapet. You know, and like you say, they're both coming at it from different angles, and that's clear here as well. You know, Sansa can see things that John clearly can't. You know, his speech to it, she basically tells him what we've been saying for the last 7 years, where she's, you know, about every fucking Stark boy, to be honest, where she says, you have to be smarter. Like, yeah, you're not Ned. Don't be as dumb as he was.
Yeah, Ned's dead. Let's move on from that.
She literally spelled it out to me. So that was really nice and refreshing to hear. And then, you know, the conversation then where they start talking about Cersei, and I think there's a really nice moment for Sansa, which again, we've been calling since back in season 2 and 3, where she says, I learned a great deal from her.
Yeah.
And she really has. And it shows in her character now, you know, you can see Cersei in her. She is, you know, she is the Jedi to Cersei Sith now.
I think that's a nice touch as well, because I mean we talked in the first couple of seasons about, I mean, Sansa was pretty useless in that first sort of season and a half, 2 seasons. She, you know, she was that fawning schoolgirl who, you know, just constantly just got shat on from a great height. And it wasn't until Joffrey picked up with Margaery and they forced her to marry Tyrion, all of a sudden she realized that actually everything she thought was the case was absolute crap. And so she then realized that, you know, she could be her own person and make her own destiny. She didn't need to, you know, she didn't need to hand it to her, and she didn't need to, you know, to bow to anybody else to do it. And she's just grown and grown and grown to a point now where you could put her and Cersei side by side, and actually you wouldn't really know at this point, if Sansa was in that position, which way she'd go.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's a really interesting thing, that they started playing on, especially by playing up this conflict with her and Jon. I think the problem is the Littlefinger of it, because you don't need him at all for this.
No, which, you know, they do recognize and deal with, so they just maybe take a little bit too long to do that. Littlefinger has very much served his purpose now. So as we're moving pieces around the board, it is time to just shuffle Littlefinger off or allow him a victory, whichever you're going to do. But yeah, he's got nothing to add here now. The pieces are in place. The dynamic between these two is really good. So we don't need him. But you're absolutely right. Yeah, seeing the way that feeds into Sansa's character and how she can go either way, like she is. As I've said all along, really, whilst my favourite character may be Jon, certainly the most interesting, and I think the character's arc that I like the most is definitely Sansa's. The way she grows and changes and evolves throughout the show, she is definitely the best written of all of the characters. You know, for different reasons than I will tell you that John or Jamie are, by and large, very well written. Jamie even more so than John. But with Jamie, it's because whilst he does grow and evolve, he always stays true to his internal drive. You know, his character is consistent. He just grows within the boundaries of that. Whereas Sansa has completely just smashed down our expectation of what she was going to be. And so it's always brilliant to see scenes with her now. And there's many, many more of them to come in these latter seasons, where she's just standing tall. I absolutely love to see her do that. And Sophie Turner does really good work with that when she's given it as well. She is quite commanding in her performance, you know, whereas earlier Sansa was quite meek and mild. So, really, really good stuff. So over we go. To King's Landing, and this is a great scene for Jamie, just so good. Calling Cersei out at every opportunity, you know, a dynasty for who? He says to her, you know, and like, he is, as I was just saying, just, he is absolutely not and never will be a tyrant, and he wants no part really in what Cersei's doing here. He's kind of saying, like, look, enough is enough now. Like, look how many people are dead. All of our children are dead. Like, this has to stop. And we have to question what we're doing here, but it's too late because Cersei has just gone full fucking Skeletor at this point.
Well, yeah, and I think the thing with Cersei as well, I mean, you kind of see it at this point where all the way through, all you've had is comparisons, not from us because we've kind of gone a different way with it, but all you had all the way through was when they put Cersei and Dany opposite each other. And now Dany's all about liberation and freedom and, you know, she, and what's rightfully hers, whereas Cersei's conniving and manipulative and all the rest of it. But actually, at this point, they're more or less the fucking same, because you've got Dany, who's there. You know, she's on the verge of becoming a warmonger, because she wants what she feels is rightfully hers, and she is going to invade the country with her Dothraki army and her Unsullied and the hordes of whoever else and her dragons, and do whatever she has to do to get the throne. And at this point, Cersei is saying the same thing. I said, well, I don't know. Okay, we can't have a dynasty. It'll just be for us then. Fuck it. Fuck everybody else. Like you've always said, fuck everybody else. We will say, right, solid. We'll put our flag in the sand. And as a bonus, our brother who killed our mother and our father, who we hate anyway, he's on the other side. So that's even more reason just to fuck things up a bit. And it's all at this point, it's almost like which one is supposed to be the evil and which one's supposed to be the antagonist of the piece, because actually they're both just acting at wankers.
That's been a problem all along, isn't it? It's just becoming more and more it's coming to the front more and more as this season goes on. And we've nowhere near hit the apex with Danny yet.
God no. But I mean the whole dichotomy of the two has been that they are polar opposites but actually that line, you know, I mean, we've said it all the way along, that line is actually so thin and faint anyway.
Yeah.
It's just people chose not to see it. People chose to see Danny as this oppressed, conquering hero. And that, all of a sudden, there are so many similarities between her and Cersei. It's very difficult, but people will still say, oh, no, she's fighting for rights. She's fighting for the people. And even to the point where we get to season eight, and people are still saying, oh, well, no, that's it. She's not doing that. So, well, yeah, she's been a despot since fucking day one.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the worst of that is to come in a couple of episodes' time. I think it's a couple of episodes' time anyway. Yeah. It's actually quite interesting, isn't it? And it's something that I feel like if it wasn't so poorly observed, would be really good. And there would be a lot for us to dig into and sink our teeth into there. But unfortunately, it gets lost on the majority of the audience because it's been so poorly observed and communicated. And I think that's actually mishandling from the showrunners rather than anything else. I think they don't actually realize what they're doing. I think this is very much like, yes, it's a blatant one, but it's very much our reading rather than an intended reading. It's just that it's so fucking blatant. I think they've unknowingly done that. I really do. But, you know, other than the fact that Cersei's gone full fucking Skeletor, pacing around a war room in her fucking black armor and stuff.
Yeah.
I think the scene is quite good here, and I think Jaime calling her out is good and is needed.
Yeah.
You know, and then straight off the back of that, then, because, you know, as usual now, just as we closed the last season with a round robin, we seem to be starting this one with a round robin. Yes. So these scenes are back to back. In comes the fucking gypsy pirate king. Euron just waltzes in like fucking less charming Jack Sparrow. Like we have this discussion, but like I said last season, I think Euron would have been a good villain for the Ironborn, but the second he shows up here, like, he doesn't fit here, and he clearly doesn't from right out. As soon as he showed up first time out when I was watching it in this scene, I was just like, fucking kill him now, he needs to go, this is a mistake. Unfortunately, they double down on it, and they try and force our hand into taking him as a villain. And the problem is, he's coming off the back of Ramsay, and he's nowhere near as charismatic, nowhere near as interesting, and nowhere near as threatening. It is clear from here, and especially when he's trying to antagonize him as well, it is very clear that Jaime could, even with one hand, could absolutely kick the shit out of him where he stands.
Yeah.
Like, there is absolutely no threat involved. And I will stand by that when we get to season eight as well. Yes. And we'll talk about that then. But what this also shows us in this kind of throne room scene is just how much Jaime is clearly a much better king than Cersei is a queen.
Yeah.
Like, Jaime sees straight through Euron, has none of his bullshit.
Yeah.
And just kind of dismisses him with a kind of almost just regal nobility, if you like. Just like, just get out of my fucking way. Do you know what I mean? Why are you even in my room? But he's polite about it, you know? And I just think he would have made a fucking fantastic ruler. Yeah, but then
it's interesting, actually, because it's a really interesting juxtaposition of the scene with Jaime and Cersei in where she's having the floor painted and on the map done and stuff.
Yeah.
And she's talking about their enemies to all sides. And she's talking about, no, she says about when she comes back to Olenna Tyrell in the West, and she says, oh, our enemies to the West, and got the high card, and just, Olenna, the cunt. And it's just so unstatesmanlike, it's so unregal. And then you get Jaime, who's technically nowhere near the throne, because he was the Queen's brother. The Lannisters aren't on the throne, it's the Baratheons. So it's like, if she very much has no business being queen, and she doesn't even know how to act like a queen.
Yeah.
Whereas he's like, and has no claim on the throne, and he's just, he is, as you said, he is the most regal motherfucker in the room. And he'll put up with Euron because he doesn't want an incident, he doesn't want things to escalate, but at the same time, he wants nothing to do with him.
I mean,
thinking about those two scenes together, it made me laugh.
Yeah, it's weird that they happen to be side by side. It doesn't seem to fit, But again, you know, this is one of those episodes where they're just jumping around. But I mean, while we're talking about Euron, as I say, he doesn't belong here. But just in general, if he's not going to be the main sort of antagonist for, for Yara and Theon and the Ironborn, then what the fuck is his point? Like, what does Euron actually want other than to get his dick wet?
Well, this is it. This is the question. And I mean, we already saw, like, when he came to the Iron Isles, he was making his pitch to be king, and you know, it was basically, you know, along the lines of, I should be a king because I'm going to fuck the Dragon Queen, except you're not, so I'm going to fuck somebody else instead. Right, okay, that doesn't necessarily make you so much, as much a king as a rapist. But yeah, it's just entirely pointless. And then you get this thing whereby he's in the throne, he's in the throne, he's giving it large. I want to kill people for you, whatever it is. And Cersei writes, well, I don't trust you. You know, you're a mercenary, and you'll stab me in the back as soon as anybody else. But as you said earlier on, he's not credible enough as a villain. I mean, when we had Joffrey there, Joffrey started out as a, you know, pathetic little, you know, man baby, and then he grew into that role of being an absolute cunt because he got power, and all of a sudden, you know, there was something that changed him. Ramsay was always a duplicitous cunt, but we didn't see that. We saw him in one of his games. He came in and he was helpful, he was friendly, he was nurturing, he was caring, he tried, and then he effectively betrayed Theon. So we got to experience him becoming a villain in the same time as the people in the show did. Euron just turned up and gone, yeah, look at me, I'm bad. And you're supposed to all of a sudden think there's a credible threat for Jaime or for Yara and Theon or for Daenerys or for anybody. And actually, he's just, as you say, he's playing fucking poor man Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, he's fucking awful. He is absolutely awful. I'm going to go out on a limb because we've still got two full seasons to go. But I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm pretty sure if you call me on this in the last episode, I'll be right. I think he is by far and away the worst character in the entire fucking show. We can evaluate that when we get to the end. I'm sure we'll have some sort of wrap-up episode, but he just absolutely grinds my fucking gears because he is entirely pointless. I hate him.
If you look at what happens with Cersei and her army and stuff, no, when we get into the final season, actually, he's out of the picture anyway, as a credible threat, because she brings in the mercenaries.
Yeah, he's useless. He adds absolutely nothing. And, you know, I say I hate him. You know, even when we say we hate Theon, we know why we hate Theon. OK, there are character reasons for hating Theon. This is completely different. I hate him because he's barely a fucking character. He's a caricature, if anything.
I was going to say he's a cartoon.
Yeah, he's fucking awful. He makes me want to reach through the screen and punch him in the face every time he comes on, and not in a good way like Joffrey or Ramsay did. I hate him, hate him, hate him. But anyway, rant of the week over about Euron. Come back next week for another. Come back every week that Euron's in an episode, and I will continue to rant about it. So over we go for some more pointless shit with Sam. However, it is very well executed. You know, I do like this montage. Someone's clearly been watching the Jean-Pierre Jeunet. I mean, it's flat out ripped off. Or is it? Or are we calling it a homage?
Not the Wonder Twins, no.
You know, and maybe you could call them an homage if it was something that Jeunet did in our film, but this is a calling card of Jeunet. Yeah. Like, this, you cannot mistake this. But look, actually, they pull it off perfectly. Like, it's very well executed, really well done. But it feels like it belongs in an entirely different show. You know, seven years in, and they're still treating this like film school. It's like all of a sudden they've just seen fucking Amelie or Delicatessen, and they've gone, oh, that's cool. Let's try and do that.
Amelie was the comparison I was going to make. Because, I mean, even with the soundtrack, it's far too upbeat for what we're getting. Yeah. It's very subtle, but it's far too upbeat for what we have in the rest of the show. And no, it immediately sprang to mind with me as well. And you just think it's nice, it's good character work. You know, it shows that, even when he's in a place that he wants to be, he feels he would be a good maester and all this sort of stuff. Even they don't fucking want him. So there's some nice character beats there with him as well. He's there scrubbing the latrines and emptying the bedpans and shit because actually you're still a fat loser. That's how he's always going to be viewed. So that was quite nice because obviously that gives his character a chance to come through as well. Where actually, he will take on the chin because he's working towards something, and then obviously we get the rest of the episode later. So that was quite nice. It worked really well, but as you said, completely fucking ripped off.
Yeah, totally. But they pull it off really well. So yeah. I'll give them that. But this really does just feel to me like they're just trying to see if they can do it, because they've just seen Delicatessen or Amelie, as you say, and they've gone, ah, I bet we can do that. Where can we fit that in? Let's have a go. But look, they pull it off. It just feels like it doesn't belong. But like you say, we do get some good stuff for Sam, but whatever. That's a nice little diversion that doesn't belong anywhere in this show.
But then again, it's a nice little distraction for fucking Euron, isn't it?
It is. I'll take it over the shit with Euron any day. Not too much to say about the stuff with Brienne that we get. Brienne, sorry, that we get next, other than her deck in pod after the cheap shot, which is hilarious.
Like, the one thing I wasn't expecting to see, I was expecting Tormund to jump in and take Pod's place. It would cement the attraction of her in his eyes, but also it would give the viewers something where actually she kicks the living fuck out of him. Just because she can.
Yeah, but I love the fact she decks him after he takes a cheap shot at her.
Yeah.
Just really, so again, a lot about both characters without having to do much.
Yes.
You know, like Pod being the opportunist decides to get a shot in, and she's too honourable. That was out of order, so he's going to pay.
But it's quite actually interesting, actually, because that's not the Pod we've ever seen. And it's almost as if Pod is learning from the people around him as well. So
where definitely
Ron has influenced him, Tormund and the other wildlings are influenced. Think actually, you can do all them. You had it with Jaime when he lost his hand and he was sparring with Bronn. Bronn was teaching him to fight with the other's hand. And he said, "Oh well, that's not fair." So nobody fights fair. Only rich guns fight fair, and they all are dead. And Pod is learning as well. It's quite a nice touch.
Yeah, and it's something that's actually come through again for. I guess you need to watch the show in as close proximity as we are here to pick it up. But don't forget, last time we actually saw Pod getting trained by Bronn. And that was the thing. So he's clearly picked this up off Bronn through his last training session. So really, really good. Very, very funny. And then we get this Sansa Littlefinger scene, which we've already kind of covered this a bit, because my note literally says, did we really need another Sansa? And look, this is a good scene. Very good. Again, more Sansa stuff that I really like. And look, as much as I'm saying he's played out his purpose, this is good stuff for Littlefinger as well. Oh, as we've said before, when he's good, he's very good. But
yeah, and when we see him in this season, he will be good. It's just entirely superfluous.
Yeah, we do not, we have all of this information already. You are just repeating yourself for about the third time. It feels like filler. So
if they're saying they need longer episodes at this point to tell the story, because they're going to have less episodes, but they're going to be longer. Okay, fine, but don't retread the same ground three times in the same episode.
Exactly. So we don't need it, but it is a good scene. But not much to say about it, because we've already covered it. We don't need it. So moving on.
And again, the only nice thing that came out of it actually was right at the end. So he takes his leave when Brienne comes. And she says, "Oh, no, what does he want? Oh, I know exactly what he wants." And again, we just see this evolution of Sansa where she's now starting to read people.
Yeah,
and she knows and it's just showing yet more of her evolution. So from that point of view, it's quite nice. But yeah, we didn't need the scene at all.
No, not at all. And speaking of things we didn't need, and also speaking of just people who are a waste of space and annoy me and really shouldn't be on the fucking show, just fuck off, Ginger Nut. Really? Do you know what? What is the fucking point in Ed Sheeran being here? He's just distracting from the scene, because he doesn't really say anything. When he does, he's terrible. He's got his weird fucking wonky-eyed, thin, ginger-haired, fat fucking beardy face all over my screen.
Well, apart from being ginger, I can empathise with him there, because I've got a wonky eye and a fucking stupid beard and fat face as well. But
he's an easy target, right? I fucking hate him.
Yeah, I mean, I never saw the point. I know, this show is littered with cameos, especially from musicians, and by all accounts, he's a friend of Maisie Williams, and he wanted to be on the show, and she goes, so that's all fine. But this entire scene, again, even without him in it, this scene adds nothing.
Nothing at all, okay, but I quite like the scene. It's easy going. It's a bit of a break, again, from the dirge that we got. It's actually got more energy than most of the other scenes, despite the fact they repeatedly frame Ed Sheeran in shot and cut away from him. And it is literally, as you say, he's a friend of Maisie Williams, and it looks like that as well. It's literally like she's gone, "Can my mate be in the show, please?" And then it turns out her mate's Ed Sheeran. Everybody's a bit starstruck. They're like, "Oh, make sure you get him in the frame. People will talk about this. Oh, this is coverage." This this kind of stunt casting, we've talked about it before, does nothing but detract from the show.
It does.
Terrible.
The other guys in the scene, so there are only two other guys who really spoke. I can't remember either of their names. So yeah, the guy was the lank black hair, and then you've got the, I think he, is he the guy in This Is It, the kid in This Is England?
Yeah. I can't think of his name, but yeah, he is. Yeah.
They're both really good.
Yeah, they are.
They both do really good
the
jobs.
The scene is good.
The scene is good, even with Aya sort of, no, okay, apart from the thing with the song, Aya is really sort of mistrusting when they give her the food first, and she's like, no, you take it first. And after everything she's been through and after everything she's done, you would rightly assume that she's paranoid they poisoned it. But actually, the fact that they're saying, well, no, I've been brought up to be hospitable, because if you're kind to strangers, strangers will be kind to you. All this stuff. And it's that really naive worldview that Arya had right back in season one.
Yeah.
So it's bringing it around full circle. And that I really like. But yeah, putting fucking Ed Sheeran in it, there's no point whatsoever.
It actively makes the scene worse. And look, I'm fine with you having famous people cameo in and stuff if it doesn't detract from the scene. Do you know what I mean? Like, if it had been literally a quick, you know, like, he did a song and that was him and gone, like, it would still pull me out of the show. I'd still be like, that was a bit wanky.
Yeah.
But it's one and done. It's gone. The fact that you linger on him constantly and he says nothing. He has a handful of lines.
Yeah.
Which he completely fucking murders.
Yes.
Like, and bearing in mind, he calls himself an actor as well, mind you.
Does he? I didn't
yeah,
know that.
Yeah, yes. Well, he is.
Yeah, I thought that was his thing. I thought he was a musician. I didn't think
he considers himself, you know, a performer, shall we say, then. I've read interviews
with him
before.
He's as much an actor as I am a fucking ostrich.
Yeah, I've read interviews with him before where he talks on about, you know, his approach to performance and acting and stuff like that. Like, he's a fucking wanker. I'm sorry, but he just really gets under my skin. Anyway, moving on. This isn't an irrational Ed Sheeran hate podcast.
I don't think there's such thing as irrational Ed Sheeran hate, is there?
I don't think so, no. So the scene itself is good, but it adds nothing. So as you say, other than drawing that juxtaposition with where Arya started, and you know, other than some decent performances and some nice humour, you know, it is nice when she flat out tells us, you know, it gives us her arc now for the rest of the season. They say, where are you going? I'm going to King's Landing. I'm going to kill the Queen. And they all start laughing because it's so ridiculous. It's nice. It's played off really well. And it's a good way to handle a little bit of exposition there. Like, we kind of know that anyway. But, you know, every episode is someone's first episode. So just in case, here it is. Like,
although, let's be fair, if your first episode is episode fucking 61, you're in, or 73, you're in a bit of trouble.
Well, it's one of those things, isn't it, where you can just be skimming around channels one night and go, I've never seen Game of Thrones. Oh, it's the first one of the season. All right, let's have a look.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I did think with this scene, actually, is that we've had Arya's story comes in blocks. So, we had the bit with her doing her water dancing and all that. Every year she had like a separate arc which feeds into the main one. So, we had the water dancing in Ciri Farrell. Then we had her on the run with Gendry. Then we had her with the Hound. Then we've had two seasons of her with the fucking House of Black and White. So this one, it's a nice way of actually bringing her back around and saying, well, look, I've done all this shit and my story could have pretty much ended there.
Yeah.
Because I said I was going home. So I could quite easily turn up in Winterfell now and nobody would think anything of it. So the fact they're reintroducing her and giving her something to do is quite nice. But yeah, just the way this scene plays out, because it's so focused on Ed Sheeran rather than focused on Arya, it's just quite annoying.
It
would be far more impactful if she just fucking pops up somewhere. Because the last time we've seen her, you know, she's just executed fucking dozens of people at the Twins. And then in 3 weeks' time, she pops up behind somebody and sticks a fucking shiv in their back. That's the type of thing you can do with this character now, because that's the way they've set her up.
Yeah, it literally feels like this scene exists just to get Ed Sheeran on the screen.
Yeah.
And fuck that, okay? As you rightly said, they were saying, you know, they push for time and they need two seasons to finish the show. Right, okay, fine. Don't fuck around like this then.
Well, yeah, exactly. And there's lots of this, certainly in this season. I don't think so much in season 8, but there's a lot of this sort of shittery in this season, whereby you think, well, hang on, you're sitting them. On the one hand, you're saying you need two seasons to get it done, you need longer episodes to get it done. And then you're saying, well, actually, we need less episodes. We only need 13 instead of 20. Okay, well, fine. If you need 13 longer episodes than 20 normal ones, then okay, we can do that. But then don't spend 8 minutes on this shit.
Yeah.
You know, don't bounce around spending 10 minutes with Cersei, Jaime, and Euron earlier when you could have done it in three.
It's
just
horseshit.
Yeah.
The episodes, you know, we've had some good stuff, but by and large, the episodes really starting to take a turn for the worse for me. But thank fuck we have the Hound to dig us out of the shit.
Yes.
Fantastic scene this, but it's like straight off the bat. Best line of the show award straight away to the Hound, where they say, why are you always in such a foul mood? Experience. Love it. That is some quality fucking writing.
That is brilliant. And then you get the more juvenile sort of our level humour, where it's like, who do you think you're fooling with that top knot you bought, cunt? It's like,
that was excellent.
It's like, no self-respecting man wears a fucking man bun anyway. You're bald and you're trying to, it's a fucking Homer Simpson level comb over.
Yeah, it's brilliant. That is actually my next note. My first note on this scene is, why are you always in such a foul mood? Experience.
Yeah, I love that line.
Great fucking line. Just, and again, only the Hound could get away with it, but he nails it perfectly. And then my very next note is just that quote. Who do you think you're fooling with that top knot, you bald cunt? That's fucking fantastic. Brilliant line. But just great, great scene. Says a lot about, we've talked about the rules of reanimation and stuff like that before. And they don't answer anything here. But I feel like from a character perspective, they offer us a lot. Just like we had with Melisandre at the end of last season, where she's admitting that she was wrong and perhaps she doesn't know what the Lord of Light is doing. And who fucking knows? This is all just mystic stuff that we don't understand. And we get that here as well, but from a slightly different viewpoint. I think they make good efforts to explore that. And the scene works really well. You get stuff like there's no justice. If there were, you'd be dead and that girl would be alive.
Yeah.
And it's... The Hound is being allowed to grow outside of being just this big fucking lungering monster, brutish character that he started off as. We've seen his growth with Arya, and we've seen, albeit most of it happening off screen and it being poorly handled when he's reintroduced, we saw his growth when he was with Lovejoy as well. And then using then the juxtaposition of all of the resurrection stuff and talking about the Lord of Light and things like that, that's the missing piece of the Hound at the moment, because he has nothing to offer. He has nothing to live for, really. He's just got this kind of bloodlust at the moment because people killed his friends, and so to start peeling those layers away and to see him being challenged by religion, it's really, really good.
It's really developing. I think the only thing I'd say there is I don't even think the bloodlust is there anymore. I think he had, because he executed the guys in the last episode we saw him, where he got to hang two of the three of them, and rather than cut their heads off, or he had that. And then it's almost now he's like, he doesn't know where he belongs. He's gone along with them because he's got nothing else to do. And so the fact that we get this exchange with Barrett Dondarrion is like, do you think I don't ask myself every night why he keeps bringing me back? I don't know. And then he gets to look at the fire and sees the whites coming past the wall and all the rest of it. It's like all of a sudden he's got a purpose. Which even when he was Joffrey's bitch, and even when he was taking Arya to be, to sell her off or whatever he was planning on doing with it. Even then, he never really had a purpose. It was just kind of the thing he was doing. It's like, it's not plot device. Yes. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, right, okay, we've got two seasons left. We're going to keep him in for a while. So, what are we going to do with him? We need to give him something to actually get his teeth into. Because everything we've had so far, he's just kind of been like a neutered little puppy running around going, oh, look at me, look at me, look at me. And that, it hasn't worked for him.
No, he's just been muscle. But you mentioned it, we get that that scene with the fire, which is beautifully well done. Of course, the Hound being afraid of fire, he's literally having to face his fears here.
And realizing there's something bigger.
Yeah, exactly. Really, really good. And the scene itself is incredibly tense, with him. The fact that, of course, he's scared of the fire, and then him the performance is excellent with him describing what he's seeing. It's chilling. Really, really good stuff. And then straight off the back of it, again, these two scenes don't need to be next to each other.
No, because they don't. They really
because
don't.
It doesn't fit after the fight, which is a shame, because actually both of them are excellent, because the scene with the Hound burying the bodies as well is just some absolutely top-notch character work. He's taken the time to bury them and to mourn them and to move on. So it shows there's humanity in him, but he doesn't have the level of social understanding or the level of education or even the level of empathy beyond knowing that it's right to bury them, to be able to eulogize them. He just does his best. He just kind of buries them and gives a really heartfelt, well, I'm sorry you're dead, knowing that actually he may have contributed to that.
Well, there's no may have about it, is there? I mean, that's what he's feeling, is that, if I hadn't robbed you and left you here, you might
be alive.
Or you might have been able to leave.
Yeah, so...
You might have had a chance, sort of thing. So, it's some, we don't see a lot of guilt in this show, actually, and this is probably one of the best, most understated examples we do get.
And it's exactly that; it's understated, which is what the character is. As I say, you feel like if this had been Jamie or even John, yes, they'd have been carrying the guilt, but they're eloquent enough and well versed enough in society to know that, well, when you bury someone, you have a eulogy. So you wouldn't just say, "Oh, I'm fucking sorry, you're dead." Yeah. You would say, you would go on and wax a bit lyrical about it.
Well, he tried the prayer, didn't he? He tried, you know, the Father of Mercy.
And he can't do it. Yeah.
He can't, because he doesn't know it. You know, it's because he's not educated and all the rest. And I think it's interesting as well, because I've had this in the past in real life, where I'm a big dude. He's an even bigger fucking dude. Yeah. And the temptation is always to see people of that as being fucking either lumbering oafs or overly aggressive and unnecessarily dominant. And we're actually, and that's why he played the first four seasons.
Yeah.
And then we didn't see him for a year, and then he came back, and he was a changed man. But this, again, it's the first time we've seen any humanity in him. And actually, it's like, look, it doesn't fucking know. It doesn't matter who I am or what I've done. This is the right thing to do. And all of a sudden, it's like, he could be the size of fucking Arya.
Yeah.
Or he could be the size of the mountain. It doesn't make any difference, because all of a sudden, he's a person going, fuck, this isn't right. I can't just leave them to rot in there. And again, all of this is just this really nice character work from in the writing and from Rory McGannon as a performance as well. It's just really bringing this character on. And I think where we go with the Hound over the next however many episodes he's in works really well.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is very good work in the performance. I think Rory McGann's excellent and delivers, especially this, especially I'm Sorry You're Dead, is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
His performance is heartbreaking. And you know, the fear in his eyes when he's looking in the fire as well is all really, really good stuff. But as we've said before, you know, especially when it comes to delivering lines, the work has to be there in the script. So credit where it's due.
Yeah,
you know, definitely. That's every, to accomplish something like this, everyone needs to fire on all cylinders. It needs to be there on the page, and it needs to be interpreted properly, both by the performer and the director.
Yes.
So everybody's firing on all cylinders here, and it's really, really good. The two best scenes in the episode by far. Really, really excellent stuff. But then we quickly go back over. We leave them and go back over to see Sam. And fuck me, the stone skins come along quick, innit?
Well, like, I mean, it's bizarre because, you know, it took like three quarters of a season to materialize at all.
Yeah.
To be like a tiny crack in the skin. Then all of a sudden it was his entire forearm, but it hadn't seemed to affect it. And now it's, from that, he's wearing a fucking stone suit of armor.
Yeah, it's come on very quickly. And, like, I don't understand, that his questioning of Sam, like, whether Danny's arrived and things. It's like, why? Hang on, you're locked up. Well, how do you know what the fuck is going on?
Well, not only that, he doesn't know. Sam is potentially a maester, potentially a fucking toilet scrubber. How is he going to know what's going on?
That's what I'm saying. It's a weird question to ask.
But again, Sam's response is, I've not heard anything.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, I don't fucking know.
It's just another one of those things where it feels like, okay, it's been a long time, so we need to reintroduce him and remind you what his motivations are. So it's clumsy, but fine. I'll give him a pass. You know, it's good to see Jorah again, at least.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So that's all good. And then we're on to our kind of back end here with everybody showing up at Dragonstone. Isn't it a fucking good job that Stannis didn't lock the gates when he left? Fucking hell.
Well, yeah.
Everything wide fucking open.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not being funny, though. Actually, it reminds me of, there was a joke in The Simpsons many years ago whereby a gangster bought these gates that were bomb-proof, bulletproof, ram-proof, all the rest of it. And so, well, how did he get caught? Well, he forgot to lock them. And it kind of explains me that. But I'm not being funny. If you're building a castle, you're building a stronghold.
Yeah.
Who the fuck builds paths and bridges like that?
As I'm saying, like
the entire thing is ludicrous. I mean, it looks very grand, it looks impressive, and obviously we're seeing a lot more of it now than we did when Stannis was there, because it's daylight. And they've gone, oh shit, yeah, this place exists during the day as well as the night. Right, okay. So I mean, you get that. And so we get this really fucking uncomfortable walk and all the rest of it. Really atmospheric. The fact nobody's speaking is a good thing, because nobody can fuck it up. And then you get inside, so you get the dragon motifs on the castle. She goes in. What is it with this show and really fucking uncomfortable chairs?
I know.
Who's going to sit in that throne or the Bastard Iron Throne? I'm not being funny.
I know, yeah, I know.
Fucking pushing on something.
And also, why bother going for the Iron Throne? You've got a perfectly good one right there. Like,
to be fair, it's probably better.
Yeah, I think it looks cooler.
Definitely.
But yeah, all of the entry to Dragonstone is good. It feels like this is a real weighty sense of accomplishment. And actually, you know, I think this end is phenomenal. Like, I liked the ending of season 6, where it was, you know, we had that sense of excitement and it was building up. You know, when we get just we haven't had any dialogue for the last minute or so, and you just get Dany and Tyrion in the war room just exchanging glances, and then just ending on her saying, "Shall we begin?"
Yeah.
Feels so weighty and important.
It does. And I mean, I remember thinking that first time out. I remember when this was first on TV, I remember going and thinking, that's a really strong ending, because now you're setting up.
We're starting
the season, and we've done all the manoeuvre and all the posturing, which we probably should have done the end of the last season, but we're in the place now where we can move on. Bear in mind, there are only six episodes left of the season now.
Yeah.
So we're now thinking, right, okay, we can really get going. The one thing I didn't say actually as well, there's the scene with Sam and Gilly where he finds out the dragonglass and sets up Dragonstone.
Yes, yes.
That's it's a really nice transition. We've had so many heavy-handed transitions in the past. We're actually, this serves John's storyline. And, we happen to be there as well. Oh, fuck, okay. Whereas normally things are so heavily choreographed and so heavily signposted in the show that you think, oh, well, okay, then that's fine. So this worked really well. And the fact that you don't get lots of talking as soon as they arrive, it's they're on the boat, they get off the boat, they walk 500 miles up bridges and over hills and down dales and all the rest of it to get to this castle. And that's all really good as well. And then you get the one line after what, probably 2.5-3 minutes by the time we get to the actual line. And you've really worked for that. You've followed them, you've really worked for it. And it's not something big and poignant, or it's just, well, should we start then?
It's great.
And the delivery as well. I mean, Emilia Clarke's delivery is really understated as well, which I think, I mean, we talked about it being understated a minute ago. It's not over the top, which you'd have got with Cersei.
It's really matter of fact, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just like, right, we're here to do a job. This is all lovely, big fucking dragon on the wall, huge castle, massive armada. That's all great. But this is just the end of Act One here. We've got a lot to do. Really, really, really good ending. But as you pointed out, it does sort of feel like they're acknowledging the fact that you've wasted the entirety of your first episode, because all of that shit that should have happened at the end of last season when we were wrapping up is now gone. So let's start season 7 proper now.
It's quite apparent. I mean, Daenerys' costumes have changed as we've gone through. She's gone from wearing fucking bed sheets to being, again, she's practically in the fucking Skeletor armor now. She's practically, she might as well have stolen Cersei's tailor at this point.
All in black, pointy,
And that big fucking shoulder pads and,
But, I mean, throughout the first five, most of season 6 as well, seasons, I was constantly saying how good the costume department is on this show, how they absolutely nail things, but it just seems like they shit the bed in these last two seasons. They are trying too hard to express character through costume when actually the performances are being pitched for the fucking stall as well.
And the way they've done it, they've done it with Sansa, right? The justification with Sansa is that she's up north where it's fucking cold.
Yeah.
So you can get away with it. But again, she's all in the high necks and the big shoulders and the big fucking war gowns and stuff. And the three of them are actually pitched very similarly. They're pitched very close together.
They are. And I think actually part of it with Sansa, though, is that it feels earned as well.
Yes. It's like the battle uniform.
Yeah. And actually, I'm probably reading slightly too much into this, but I do look at the costumes quite a lot in the show because they are so good. And I've always quite liked that Sansa wears this huge, looks like a big fucking manacle almost around her neck. And I've always drawn something quite film school student coming out. I've always drawn something quite symbolic out of that. It's like she is still chained to this past. She has been weighed down now by the responsibilities of being the Queen of the North, and she's still got all of her past to deal with herself. And so there are, there are things like that, which I think the costume department do really well. And then there's fucking Cersei's Skeletor outfit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what are you thinking of? Again, with Dany, they've worked really hard to try and, as best as they can, not make her a fucking despot. Like, they fail miserably. But all the way through the first 7 seasons, they try and pull her back from the edge all the time. And it always fails because we can see straight through it. But here, again, now it's just like they've gone, fuck it then. Just dress her like a villain and off we go.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, by the time you get to the very end, she might as well be in a fucking Mao suit.
Yeah.
She's practically dressed like fucking Pol Pot.
It's ridiculous how over the top it gets. But as we've always said, we maintain the fact that it's been there all along. It's just like all of a sudden they literally have gone, oh, fuck, we're out of ideas now, and you're not being subtle, so why should we?
Yeah.
Like, and that's what it feels like. It literally feels like, well, you know, earlier on we went for some subtle themes, and yeah, you know, they dressed her in all the flowing colors and stuff like that, and she was, you know, especially in her fucking come to Jesus moment where she's being held out in the flowing robes and she's sort of, yeah, in the crucifix fucking, but they went for it, and yeah, now it just feels like, well, do you know what? No. Like,
yeah,
if you're just going to turn them into fucking pantomime characters, then we'll dress them like pantomime characters.
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, interesting, you mentioned the necklace that Sophie Turner wears, which she's worn pretty much all the way through, I think. I can't remember. There was a story she was being interviewed, I think she was on Graham Norton or something like that, and she was talking about her costume. And because she was complaining about it because she's a natural blonde, and she was having to dye her hair all the time and all the rest of it. So she's complaining about that, and they were talking about the costume, and this pendant, necklace, manacle thing came up, and I can't remember if she said she had to beg them to let her keep it at the end, or whether she begged them to let her keep it and they told her no, so she nicked it.
Right.
I'll have to go back and find the story.
Hey,
I was like, it's one of those. She was like, it's so part of the character.
Yeah, well, it absolutely
that,
is.
That,
yeah.
I know, she felt she had to have it, and I can't remember whether she had to beg for it before they'd release it, or whether she, you know, they were like, well, no, you can't have it because it belongs to HBO or whatever the production company was, and we can't just give it away. And so she went, well, fuck it, I'm having it. So so I can't remember which one it wasn't. But if it was a case it was given to her and she didn't steal it, then apologies, please don't sue me. But I just remember thinking it was such a nice story as well, because again, it's just, you work on something for that long, you're gonna form attachments to things. I remember Alicia Cuthbert talking about the first season of 24, because she had one costume the entire way through, yeah, and she stole the shirt that she wore. And I just remember thinking, it's such an image, being that character for, I mean, 8 seasons, but what, 11, no, 10 years?
Yeah, it's a long time.
It's a long time, and no, especially growing up with it as well. So I remember thinking, fair play to her, the fact that like, it meant something to her on a personal level as well. I thought that was really nice. But yeah, I can't remember if she nicked it or she had to beg for it. But either way, I think she got it in the end.
Fair play to her.
But yeah, as I say, if Sophie Turner happens to be listening and didn't steal it, then I apologise. It's something I misremembered. Please don't sue me.
And if Maisie Williams happens to be listening, we'd like to know, how many faces did you steal and are hanging up on your wall?
Nobody's seen Ed Sheeran for a while.
Yeah, good point. So we've reached the end of the opening of season 7. I'll be honest, I don't think there's anything massively wrong with this episode.
It's not a strong opener, that's the problem.
No, that's exactly it. It just fails to deliver on the promise that we had at the end of season 6. And this time out, like I said, like, it was only a week, so I was just like, meh, whatever. And I kind of knew it was going to be disappointing. But I distinctly remember on the first watch through, I was like, what the fuck? Like, how do you give us this after the way you ended last season?
Well, again, it's the time difference. It's the delay, isn't it?
Yeah. But, it, you know, it's, aside from all that, there is some really good character work in here, yeah, which I always like to see. You know, there are some nice scenes. There's some good character work. The story is starting to move. We are starting to see the end game being played out, which is nice.
And I forgot to say as well, it's nice to see Jim Broadbent popping up as well.
Yes.
I'd forgotten entirely that he was in this.
So would I, yeah. It was good to see him. I can't believe we glossed over his appearance, actually. Yeah. But yeah.
I mean, it was a really nice scene as well, actually. You know, again, we've had the whole thing where everybody fucking hates Sam.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, they all think he's a liar. Well, you can't, you know, it can't be made up because there are too many. No. And you got the whole thing about it. So, well, the long night can't be made up because there are too many accounts which say the same sort of thing. So we get that. We get, all of a sudden, he's got an ally there as well, which is nice, because we've always had that with Sam, where everybody hates him because he's fucking useless, but actually there's somebody who believes in him. So that was nice as well. And yeah, I'm annoyed we skipped over that.
Yeah, there was also, actually, I didn't write it down in my notes, which is probably why I skipped it, but I should have, because it was a very nice, the way that scene ends as well, is a nice exchange between the two of them, where he says to Sam, you know, there have been however many winters before, winters have been coming for hundreds of years, and the wall has stood through them all.
Yeah.
And that's a very, like, we've heard the threat of the White Walkers dismissed by elders and nobility throughout the show.
Yeah.
But it's normally done in quite a kind of condescending manner.
So it's always still very, you know, it's the oogity-boogities and the boogeyman and all that sort of shit.
Yeah, whereas this, I feel like, treats it with more respect. And this feels more like, again, slightly condescending, I suppose, but in a much nicer way. This almost feels like a parent talking to a child.
Yeah.
And saying, like, look, don't worry. There is nothing under the bed. There's never been anything under the bed. You know, it's just that reassurance of, like, yes, I understand. I understand, Sam, you're scared. But the wall is there for a reason, and the wall will hold. Don't worry. You know, and I guess... Well, actually, no, I don't guess, because there's plenty of fat in this episode. They could have spent some time with him. It would have been nice to have spent some time with him after that scene, just to see whether he actually believed that himself.
Well, yeah, that's it.
Because it very much felt like the reassuring words of a parent to a child. It very much felt like, don't worry, the wall will be okay.
But, like, but it was quite interesting as well, because we had right at the start, back at Winterfell, where they're talking about Eastwatch by the Sea, and that's where the wall is most vulnerable. So that's where John dispatches the wildlings to. And then we get this scene with Sam and the Archmaester, whose name I can't remember, but it's Jim Broadbent. So we get that, and he said, but no, the wall has stood, and no, the wall will stand, the wall will endure, all this sort of stuff. And then we get the scene a little bit later on with the Hound looking into the fire and talking about the whites coming past, getting past the wall and walking down past the Arrowhead Mountain, all this sort of stuff. And so you've got this natural progression within the story arc within the narrative of this episode, where they're going, look, we're telling you what's going to happen. This is where they're coming from, and actually they're going to get through. But because it's done in such a way, it's not explicitly said, and it's spread out throughout the episode. Actually, it's a really good. They've done a really good job of seeding it.
Yeah, they really have. And like I said, there is a lot of that. There is some good stuff in this episode. It fails to deliver on what we were expecting, and there is just so much fat in amongst that.
This is a sort of episode 2 or 3. Once you've done your groundwork, you've done your heavy lifting to set the season off, and now you want to kind of move things along, but not be too blatant about it. This doesn't feel like a season opener. There's no immediate threat. There's no immediate draw to pull you back in next week.
No.
It's just like, oh, okay then, brilliant.
And again, more of that than anything else comes to structure. You know, you're right, it is an episode 2 or 3 of a season.
Yeah.
But then that's because the last episode of season 6 is episode 1 of this season, because their structure's so weird.
Yeah.
And, you know, yes, you know, revealing the threat to us to draw us in, it is here. We do get the image of the Night King, which is again, a good scene and creepy. It's just in the wrong place.
Well, I was going to say, it's like scene 4.
Yeah, like it should be.
Belong. And again, though, you get the Night King, you get the army behind him. They've got 3 fucking giants.
Yeah.
You know, there's a very real threat. And so that should have been the thing that, Bran is at Castle Black, and he has, you know, he goes off and walks and he sees all this shit. And this is how you close your episode out.
Well, and here's the thing, right? That we've established now that we can have pre-credit scenes.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not like there's some fucking holy format that they can't touch for this show. Nothing is written in stone. So I wouldn't want to lose the ending that we have, because I think it's phenomenal. As I said, Shall We Begin? Great ending. But why couldn't that very short scene of the Night King rolled after the credits?
Yeah.
That's a perfect way to get everybody pumped for next week, isn't it? Like,
either that, or you use that as your pre-credits. So you're bringing us straight back into the, you know, it's a brand new season, but just in case you've forgotten, because you're fucking idiots, this is the threat.
Yeah, that would have worked as well. Yeah,
drop the Frey Arya stuff. Go straight from there into into Winterfell.
Yeah, because then that picks straight up off the back of that. Yeah, that makes much more sense. So there is actually, you know, for all this saying that they need all of this time to tell a story and it's going to be tight, like, there is a much better 45-minute episode in this.
Yeah.
Much better. You know, because there are scenes that we just flat out don't need. And some of them are very good. Like the Arya scene is very good.
Yeah, it's not needed.
It's not needed, and it drags the episode down. There is far too much fat. We retread a lot of old ground. And we don't need to. You know, this doesn't need to be 50 minutes and change.
59. Like,
it doesn't need to be that long. And if it wasn't that long, it would be better.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think realistically, I mean, most episodes up until this point have been 52, 53, I think.
Yeah.
This doesn't need to be any different. It doesn't. I mean, I know it's only a couple of minutes in this instance, but they will get longer. But I don't think you need it. If you cut out the fat, and so you cut out the shitty dialogue we don't need in places, there's a couple of scenes we don't need, and there's a couple of things that belong in another episode, maybe. You could have taken this down to 52, 53 quite easily and not had any complaints.
Yeah, easily. But hey ho, we got what we got. And you know, there's an easy criticism to level there where you just say, oh, well, you just ignore the stuff that you don't want. But it's hard when
they pepper it all
the way through. It's very difficult to do.
It is, and I think the problem comes when they've already said, look, we don't want 20 episodes, we want 13, which yeah. I personally think was a mistake. I think they could have got two full seasons out of it because of the shit they've done in this episode where they've just fleshed stuff out and all the stuff they overlook in the final season, which they just don't close out.
Yeah,
they could have quite easily done, even if they'd done a full season 7 and then half a season 8. They had enough material to work. I don't see why this was their magic number, why 73 was their magic number. If the effect of that is going to be, well, instead of 52 minutes, we're going to have 59, but actually 5 minutes of that is shit we don't need, then why bother?
Yeah, exactly. Why subject us to it? Who fucking knows?
I don't think they know. I think that's the problem.
Yeah, they don't. It's the same old problem, isn't it? It feels like we're kind of fumbling around in the dark slightly.
Yes.
Which, you know, hopefully that'll improve.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I know there are elements of this season which I like. There are elements of the last season I like as well. Just not the overall story arc and some of the way the characters are set out. But no, we'll get to that when we get to it. But you know, I think there will be some moments in this season where we actually go, oh, yeah, fair play, that was really good. That really works.
There's some really good stuff coming. They definitely, and there's some really good stuff here.
Yeah, it's just not consistent, I think, and it's not structured enough, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. It is all down to the structure. That's the problem.
Yeah. So, as always, we may be wrong on this. We may have got the wrong in the stick, or we may, you know, people may just flat out disagree with us because that happens quite a lot. If you're one of those people, or if you want to get in touch and let us know you agree with us, if you're one of the few. By all means, please do so on Twitter at @ddpodcastnet. You can go to our website, which is ddpodcast.net, where you can leave comments and get in touch with us that way as well. On Facebook with the Double Nine Podcast Network, wherever you get your podcast from, be it iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Amazon Music, etc. Like, share, subscribe, leave some message, and get back to you as best we can. Until next time.
Game over.